think we can agree on is we shouldn't shut down the government over a dispute. And you want to shut it down. You keep talking about it.
The last time, Chuck, you shut it down.
No.
And then you opened it up very quickly. And
20 times.
I don't want to do what you did.
20 times, Chuck, you have called for, I will shut down the government if I don't get my wool. None of us have
you
said.
You want to know something?
You've said
okay,
it.
Okay, you want to put that
you
on
you said it.
I'll take it.
Okay, good.
You know what I'll say? Yes. If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay,
absolutely.
Fair enough.
And I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. The last time you shut it down, it didn't work. I will take the mantle
good.
Of shutting down.
That is
and
lucky.
I'm going to shut it down for border
security.
But
we security. Believe you shouldn't
okay.
shut it down.
Thank you very much, everybody.
And that was what happened yesterday in the White House, in the Oval Office, as Aunt Nancy and slimy Chuck Schumer went to meet with Donald Trump, expecting a private meeting where they could bully him around and then come out of the meeting afterwards and say whatever they wanted to say about what happened behind closed doors. And then they were surprised by the presence of the press. We're going to talk about that for a few minutes here, as well as several other things on this edition of The Daily Perspective. Good morning, Mark Congleton here with you, and I hope you are having a marvelous day today, and that you have great things planned, that you're getting your Christmas shopping done, and that life is good, just really, really good. Thank you so much for listening. I do appreciate you listening. The fact that you're there every day means a lot. It really does. And I realize that I say that every day, but it's something that I actually really do mean. I appreciate the fact that you're there every day. So once again, thank you. Thank you much for being there every day. Now I'm just checking all my little things here, making sure all my ducks are in a row. And yeah, with the Facebook Live is up, everything's recording. So all is right with the world. Oh boy, so much to get covered here. Let's go ahead and dive in. You've probably seen the snippets on the news. If you're watching the news, I keep telling you, stop watching the news. Just go search it out for yourself online and find out what's happening, because more people are getting their news from the internet now than they are from the news broadcast networks, because they don't trust them and they're realizing they're not getting the whole story. But President Trump and future House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, got into it on camera in the Oval Office over border wall funding yesterday. The president argued that funding the wall was a national emergency. He proposed $5 billion in funding. Schumer refused, insisting that he would only provide just $1.6 billion in border security funds. Actually, he said, that's what we had last year. It worked just fine. So that's what you'll get this year. I think we have all seen it doesn't work just fine. In response, Trump said he would shut down the government. He'd take responsibility for it if they failed to include additional wall funding. He said, I'm proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I'll take the mantle. I'll be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. Republicans already passed spending measures for most of the federal government, but postponed a fight over funding for the Department of Homeland Security and other cabinet-level agencies. The funding deadline is December 21st. That is a week from this Friday, by the way. Trump surprised White House reporters by calling them into the Oval Office conversation with Democrats that was originally designated as closed to the press. During the debate, both Pelosi and Schumer protested that it was taking place on camera. Trump admitted that border security was a tough issue, noting that Pelosi and Schumer opposed the idea of a wall. He cited border statistics showing that illegal traffic dropped substantially after they finished portions of the wall barriers. Pelosi was frustrated at the tone of the debate in front of the media. She said, I don't think you should have a debate in front of the press. She also defied the idea that Trump had the votes to get the wall funded, daring him to pass a wall funding bill in the House of Representatives. She said, you will not win. You do not have the votes in the House. Pelosi said that a shutdown was not worth anything, especially his promised wall. Trump expressed frustration that he needed 10 votes in the Senate to get wall funding passed and insisted that he would not keep the government fully funded unless it had more money for border security. Pelosi said, let's call a halt to this, pleading off an ongoing discussion. Schumer also protested that the discussion was taking place in front of the press. He pleaded, let's debate in private. Schumer told Trump he did not need a wall to provide border security, citing experts. The experts. Just in case you're not aware, politically speaking, an expert is anyone who agrees with what you're trying to sell. He also taunted Trump for Republicans losing the House of Representatives, reminding him that elections have consequences. He said, yeah, that's why everything's working so well. When Trump reminded Schumer that Republicans added to their majority in the Senate, Schumer sneered, when the president brags that he won North Dakota and Indiana, we're in real trouble. Pelosi concluded, this has spiraled downward, calling the debate unfortunate. And Trump replied, it's not bad, Nancy, it's called transparency. Which, as I watched this unfold, I thought, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. He said, if we don't have the border security, we'll shut down the government. We have to have the wall. He also reserved the right to have the military build the wall if Congress refused to fund it, possibly avoiding a partial government shutdown. After the meeting, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders described the dialogue with Schumer and Pelosi as constructive, despite acknowledging major disagreement on border security and transparency. Walls work. Where walls have been built, illegal crossings have dropped substantially, she said, going on to say, we will continue to pursue real solutions to defend our nation and uphold our laws, and hope Democrats will work with us in a bipartisan fashion to do so. A nation without borders is no nation at all. She's absolutely right. Every nation in the world has borders, and wise nations defend those borders, and they choose wisely who crosses those borders into their land. Well, one of the things that happened was what you heard in the open. That audio that you heard in the open. Trump decided to take a position of strength, to own the border closing. Here, let's listen to that again. It's about a minute long.
The one thing I think we can agree on is we shouldn't shut down the government over a dispute. And you want to shut it down. You keep talking about it.
The last time, Chuck, you shut it down.
No.
And then you opened it up very quickly. And
20 times.
I don't want to do what you did.
20 times, Chuck, you have called for, I will shut down the government if I don't get my wool. None of us have said it.
You want to know something?
You've said
it. Okay, you want to put that in mind.
You've said it.
I'll take it.
Okay, good.
You know what I'll say? Yes. If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay,
absolutely.
Fair enough.
And
we
I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. The last time you shut it down, it didn't work. I will take the mantle
good.
Of shutting down.
That is
and I'm going to shut it down for border security.
But we
security.
Believe you shouldn't okay. shut it down.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Now, did you catch what Schumer was trying to do? Did you catch it? You see, government shutdowns have been painted by the Democrats as something horrible, evil. We can't do that. How will the country survive if the government's not there? Who will be there to shut parks against veterans and knock down the lemonade stands of little girls? I mean, what do we do without the government being there? Well, Schumer's trying to paint this in a very, very negative light. And for the first time, a Republican has stood up and said, okay, I'll take it. I'll own it because I believe it's that important. It is so important to our national security. It is so important to the safety and security and protection of the people of this country that I won't just let it happen. I'll make it happen. I will shut this freaking government down if we don't get the protection we need for our people. If you're going to be that bullheaded and that obstinate and that resistant to what we actually need and what the people really want, then by God, I'll shut this government down. I will do it. So in that instant, Trump became the adult in the room. He became dad in the car on the trip. If you don't behave, I'm pulling this thing off the road. We're turning it around. That's what he did. He owned Chuck Schumer. Absolutely owned him. And Chuck, at that point, is thinking, I've got my soundbite. I've got what I needed. I've got him saying, I'll do it. And then he says, it's that important to the people, the safety of the people of this country. He framed it the way it should be framed. He put the spotlight on the heart of the matter and took the moment away from Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer was not happy about it. Neither was Nancy. Nancy actually mocked Trump. She met with staff afterwards. She actually threw a tantrum. She mocked Trump and using language that sounded like she was a bratty school kid. According to The Hill, sources say Pelosi exclaimed, it was so wild. It goes to show you get into a tinkle contest with a skunk and you get tinkle all over you. In other words, they were having a pissing contest. That's how she saw this. That's how she saw this, as a pissing contest. That's how out of touch this woman is. Unsatisfied with just speaking of tinkling, though, Pelosi decided to try to rhetorically emasculate Trump about border funding for the wall along the southern border. She snapped, it's like a manhood thing for him, as if manhood could ever be associated with him, this wall thing. She boasted, but the fact is, we did get him to fully own the shutdown was his. That was an accomplishment. Was she in the same room? I know she was. I've watched the video. I've got it here in a tab in my browser right here. I've got the video. That's where the audio came from. She was in the room. She saw what happened. She was there. Trump owned it. And it wasn't just him saying, oh, sure, I'll take the responsibility. It was, yeah, it's that important. If this is what it takes to get you to be sane and to do the right thing, yes, I damn well shut this government down. I will do it. That's what he was saying. I own it. And he said, when you did it before, it didn't work. Did you catch that? He said that to Schumer because back in February, Schumer and the Democrats organized a shutdown and blamed it all on the Republicans. Well, they just won't cooperate. They won't do what's right for the country. We can't manage things. We don't have the money to operate. Those stupid Republicans, you just can't work with them. They won't be bipartisan. And once again, the word bipartisan means, come on, class, what does it mean? That's right. It means shut up and do what I want. That's what bipartisan means when you hear it coming from the lips of a Democrat. Well, this is not Pelosi's first tantrum. In June of last year, she was reminiscing about President George W. Bush. She routinely fought with him, by the way. She suddenly became nostalgic. She said, I wish he were president now. I wish Mitt Romney were president. I wish John McCain were president. And then she insulted Trump. She said, as far as the Republicans, the people who voted for him, it's almost like, any mammal will do. They were just voting. She and Chuck Schumer are manipulators. They're political manipulators. Nothing more, nothing less. They're weasels. And that's what I actually called them on social media yesterday. I called them weasels. Trump came off as a leader, and those two came off as partisan hack weasels. And they're spinning it like crazy. And their cohorts in the progressive press are spinning it like crazy. I actually saw somebody say that Nancy Pelosi owned Trump in that meeting, that she was the voice of reason. No, she and Chuck were trying to get him to kick the press out so they wouldn't see what they were up to. They didn't own anything. The only person who owned anything was Trump. He owned the both of them and the entire scenario. Oh, my. Well, that wasn't all that happened on Capitol Hill yesterday. The Google CEO was squirming under the spotlight. We'll take a look at that next as the Daily Perspective continues.
The sleigh bells are ringing and the carolers are singing while the air raid sirens blare.
No, it's just Weird Al.
It's Christmas at Ground Zero. The button has
You're listening to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton
the
here. It's the home of life, liberty, and the pursuit of truth and absurdity. Hopefully you're having a big day today. Let me ask you a question. Have you signed up yet? Have you? Have you signed up for the Daily Perspective newsletter? Hey, the newsletter is cool. What you get in the newsletter is the Daily Perspective show notes. It's the actual hard links going to the stories that I talk about during the show during the day. And I also throw in some extra material as well, because usually as I scan the World Wide Web, the interwebs, looking for what we'll be talking about in the mornings, I run across so much stuff that I think is interesting that it doesn't all fit into the hour that we have together. So I go ahead and give you the whole stack. Everything I didn't get to as well. And sometimes that comes in very, very handy. And from time to time, my fevered little brain will decide to pump out something. I start typing and you get extra material coming to you that way as well. And I'd like to see you sign up if you haven't so far. So get signed up today. Go to the Facebook pages for the Mark and Mac Show or the Daily Perspective. Click on the sign up button and get the process started today and become a member of the growing family that's receiving the Daily Perspective in their inbox as well. All right? Okay. On Capitol Hill yesterday, oh, wow, the head honcho of Google was there. And what happened? Well, many things happened. But first, Representative Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York, who, by the way, is one of the weaseliest people I think I've ever seen speak in front of a camera, had something that he had to say.
But before we delve into these questions, I must first dispense with a completely illegitimate issue, which is the fantasy dreamed up by some conservatives that Google and other online platforms have an anti-conservative bias. As I have said repeatedly, no credible evidence supports this right-wing conspiracy theory. I have little doubt that my Republican colleagues will spend much of their time presenting a laundry list of anecdotes and out-of-context statements made by Google employees as supposed evidence of anti-conservative bias. But none of that will actually make it true.
Yeah, that's enough. He takes the hard line, the hard leftist line, that this is all just the imagination of the Republicans, that conservatives are pushing out conspiracy theories, that Google is doing terrible things, that Google is biased against conservatives, that this is not true. It can't possibly be true. Well, as Google CEO Sundar Pichai struggled to respond to Representative Jim Jordan, Ohio Republican, his persistent questions about an email from Google's former head of multicultural marketing named Eliana Murillo. She reported that the company attempted to push out the Latino vote in key states during the 2016 election. Well, I have that exchange right here. Now, brace yourself, because it's a little over 6.5 minutes long. But we have the time, and I think it's important for you to listen to this exchange in its entirety. Listen to the questions, excuse me, the line of questioning, and listen to the answers and the deflections. And you'll see what exactly happened during this session.
Ohio, Mr. Jordan, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pichai, in your opening statement, you said, I lead this company without political bias and work to ensure that our products operate that way. Ileana Murillo is Google's head of multicultural marketing. Does Ms. Murillo do good work?
I'm not directly familiar with her work, but she's an employee of Google, and you know, we are proud of her employees.
Well, you praised her work. The day after the 2016 election, in a four-page email she wrote about her work with the Latino vote, she said, even Sundar gave our effort a shout-out. Is she referring to you there?
She was referring to my communication around translation for a different related effort.
Okay, well, I'm going to look at two other sentences she had in that long email, again, recapping her work in the 2016 election with the Latino vote. She said this, we pushed to get out the Latino vote with our features. A few lines down in her email, she qualified that sentence, and she said, we pushed to get out the Latino vote with our features in key states. And she specifically cites the states Florida and Nevada. Near the end of her email, in a similar sentence, she says, we supported partners like Voto Latino to pay for rides to the polls in key states. With me? I want to kind of analyze those two sentences. We pushed to get out the Latino vote with our features in key states. We supported partners like Voto Latino to pay for rides to the polls in key states. Is it fair to say the we in both sentences, Mr. Pichai, refers to Google?
Congressman, we are very concerned whenever there are allegations like that. We our team looked into it.
I'm not asking that question. I'm asking, is it fair to say the we in both sentences refers to the company Google?
As Google, we wouldn't participate in any partisan efforts around any civic process, so
okay.
I don't think so.
So we pushed and we supported partners like Voto Latino to pay for rides and polls in key states, and we pushed to get out the Latino vote during the 2016 election. And how were they getting that done? They were getting that done by, according to Ms. Murillo, your head of multicultural marketing, by altering your features or configuring your features in such a way and for paying for rides for people to get to the polls. Is that an accurate reading of those? That's all I'm asking. Is that fair to say what those sentences are talking about?
Not aware of all the specifics, but we did look into it. We found no evidence that there were any activity like that from Google towards that organization.
So she's not telling the truth?
For sure, we didn't find any supporting evidence of any such activity.
She said she paid for rides to the polls, and they configured their features in such a way as to get out the Latino vote. And look, I actually think that's all okay. Right, I think that's just a good corporate citizen encouraging voter participation, encouraging people to participate in our election process. I think so far those sentences are just fine, but then there's three words at the end of each sentence that do cause me real concern. And those three words are, we push to get out the Latino vote with our features in key states. Now suddenly it gets political. We supported partners like Voto Latino to pay for rides to the polls in key states. Now, that makes everything different. So I got really just one question for you. Why? Why did Google configure its features and pay for rides to the polls to get out the Latino vote only in key states?
Congressman, as I said earlier, we found no evidence to substantiate those claims. The only effort we do around elections.
So your head of multicultural marketing, who you praised her work in this email, gave her a shout out, was lying when she said you were trying to get out the Latino vote in key states?
We today, in the U.S., around elections, we make it, and this is what users look to us for, where to register to vote, where to find your nearest polling place, what are the hours they are open, and we do those things effectively.
I appreciate that, Mr. Pichai. I already said that's being a good corporate citizen. What I'm asking is, why did you only do it in key states?
We didn't do any such activity as Google on any of these key states. I mean, there are employees. I think
Did you push to get out the Latino vote in all states?
As Google, we don't have goals around pushing out to get any particular segment. We don't participate in partisan activities. We engage with both campaigns. We support and sponsor debates across both sides of the aisle, and we provide users with information to get to elections.
Your head of multicultural marketing said you were pushing to get out the Latino vote, paying for a ride to the polls for the Latino vote only in key states, and you're saying that's not accurate.
Yes, that's right. We haven't found any evidence to substantiate
it. So she just made it up out of thin air the day after the election and wrote this email to your top executives, and it's not true?
Congressman, I'm happy to follow up, but I think the employees today do their own activities.
We don't want the follow up. I want the real answers right here in this committee.
As I said earlier, we have looked into it. We didn't find
Did you push to get out the key vote? And I would say the two most populous states for Latinos would be California and Texas. Did you push to get out the Latino vote and pay for people to go to the polls in California and Texas?
We as a company didn't have any effort to push out votes for any particular demographic. That would be against our principles. We participate in the civic process in a nonpartisan way, and we think it's really important we do it that way.
Well, I just think it's interesting, Mr. Chairman, I know I'm over time, but I think it's interesting that their head of multicultural marketing writes an email the day after the election where she talks about 71% of Latino votes voted for Hillary, but that wasn't enough. And she talks about paying for rides to the polls in key states for Latino votes to get out the Latino vote in key states. And the head of the company says that's not accurate.
Wow. Wow. Do you think possibly the man was lying? Yes, I think he was lying. So many people on the conservative side of life in this country have watched Google, who owns YouTube, who controls a lot of the internet. We've been watching as their bias has become more and more obvious. And now the head of Google sat in front of Congress and just kept repeating his talking point that they don't do that kind of thing. Even though we have evidence they do.
Chipmunks roasting on an open fire.
Something is not right here.
Hot sauce dripping from their toes.
Oh my.
Yuletide squirrels, fresh filleted by the choir.
Oh,
they poked hot skewers through their nose.
Merry Christmas. Well, the CEO of Google is denying activities that we actually know have gone on. The Democrats are trying to get Donald Trump to paint himself into a corner on many different fronts, and life is just going on like it usually does in our country with the insanity of politics. And I just have to shake my head, because they expect us, the politicians, expect us to trust them, because they're the ones who consult the experts. You can't see it, but I'm air quoting the experts. And as I've said before, once again, the definition of expert when you're dealing with politics is anyone who agrees and substantiates your particular position, even if your position is complete BS and smoke. There's going to be somebody who will substantiate your position, and they expect us to trust them. Well, we just can't trust them anymore. And we can't trust the news media to tell us the truth about things anymore. Because the news media, they're all in there. They're all in there. They got the bills to pay. They've got a board of directors. They got people that they answer to. They've got they got stockholders and the like, and they want that bottom line looking really good, so they need all the ad revenue they can get. And in order to make that ad revenue happen, keep it high, they have to make things as salacious as possible. It has to be something you'll tune into out of some sense of morbid curiosity, or, and they won't paint the picture accurately. It has to be sensational. And sometimes they will just be ridiculous in their assessments. They will call in, they'll have a panel of people come in and discuss something, like this Google situation. They'll have a panel of people come in, and every one of them will assert, no, none of that's going on. In fact, they got too much conservative crap on there. One of the people on this panel in Congress yesterday actually said that. He complained about too much conservative content being found in the answers when you Google something. Believe it or not, it really happened. So, it's business as usual with the politicians. They're lying to us. They're playing a game. And they are confident that they can continue to do so because they know that the majority of people just aren't paying attention. The same goes for what's happening with this whole deal with the investigation. The Russia probe with Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, and the various other characters involved. And one of my favorite people to listen to when I have time to is the angry Yankee, Mark Levin. The guy, he gets ticked off and doesn't mind anybody knowing. Well, yesterday on Facebook, he actually published several points about this whole situation going on with the Mueller investigation that I think are very, very important, and I want to pass them along to you, okay? Here they are. These are things for you to remember, and you need to go to the show notes today, sign up for the newsletter, get the show notes today, so you can get these notes and these points, and you can keep them where you keep things and keep them handy, because you want to refer back to these. Point number one, a sitting president cannot be indicted. That's official Department of Justice policy since 1973. Neither the special counsel nor the Southern District New York, that's the SDNY, that's the abbreviation they use, it stands for Southern District New York, nor Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, can defy that 45-year-old policy. A sitting president cannot be indicted. Point number two, SDNY is not expert in campaign finance violations, and neither is the Clinton-appointed district judge. They rarely handle campaign finance cases. The left-wing media and politicians are regurgitating what the prosecutors have merely filed in their own self-serving brief. The media and others intentionally refuse to look at the actual rules and context. They refuse to even question what these prosecutors have thrown together. Sidebar here. This is absolutely accurate. They intentionally refuse to look at the actual rules and the context because their bias prevents them from doing so. It's more important for them to demonize President Trump than it is to give you the truth in proper perspective. All right, back to point three. The actual campaign rules and context do not include non-disclosure agreements or infinite other contracts, payments, arrangements, acts of a private nature, etc., as campaign contributions. This is normal human behavior and was never intended to be regulated or reported. SDNY is dead wrong, and these private payments can be made in any manner or any amount. Again, they're private payments involving private matters. To underscore, there's no reporting requirement because they're not campaign payments made with or without campaign funds. See, this is all revolving around the Stormy Daniels situation, paying people off to be quiet about affairs. As distasteful as you may find that, he hasn't done anything illegal. Point four, SDNY inclusion of these charges in the Cohen plea deal was a sleazy political and PR attack against the president by an office coordinating with Mueller and aligned with Comey. SDNY knew Cohen would plead. It, therefore, knew its absurd allegations would not be tested in any courtroom, district, circuit, or Supreme Court. If they were tested, SDNY would be hammered like a nail. But it knew the left-wing media and politicians would use the mere over-the-top allegations from its office, with absolutely nothing more, to claim the president committed campaign felonies. No due process, no assumption of innocence. They knew they couldn't charge a sitting president. Thus, they convict the president in the press. Not only an extreme act of professional misconduct, but a violation of the very purpose of the DOJ memos banning the indictment of a sitting president, while effectively indicting him in the court of public opinion. And watch as untold numbers of media personalities and former members of the SDNY, among others, use this dirty work to predict or demand the president's indictment and or impeachment. Did that make sense to you? These people knew. They know. They can't. They know they cannot indict a sitting president. They know that there is nothing. They know he hasn't done anything indictable. They know he hasn't done anything illegal. They know he hasn't done anything impeachable. They know he hasn't done anything they can charge him with. They know this. They also know that they don't have to take him to court. They don't have to go before a judge. All they have to do is present it to the court of public opinion. And they know the court of public opinion doesn't get the whole picture because they won't allow it. The news media, the leftist progressive news media, will not present the entire picture to the court of public opinion. So their judgment will be based on the lies by the lack of information, intentional lack of information, being presented by the leftist progressive press. No due process, no assumption of innocence. This is like the Kavanaugh hearing. Judged and found guilty in the court of public opinion. And those of us who were accustomed to the manner in which these people operate, sat back, crossed our arms, bit our lips, and waited, because it all smelled really fishy. And we were right. And we're right about this as well. There is no there, there. Finally, point number five. As for impeachment, NDAs, that's non-disclosure agreements, involving wholly private matters occurring before the president was even a candidate and completely unrelated to his office, cannot legitimately trigger the Constitution's impeachment clause. Indeed, they could not be more irrelevant. The history of the clause and its high crimes and misdemeanors language make it crystal clear that the office and the president's duties are not affected in any conceivable way by these earlier private contracts. Of course, Gerald Nadler, another New York City radical, remember him denying all the wrongdoing going on at Google? Gerald Nadler, another New York City radical, could not care less. He's more than thrilled to be an executioner in this French Revolution redo. The Constitution be damned. Meanwhile, he and the others wave around the Constitution as if they're defending it against a tyrant. It is they who are the tyrants. And again, the great one, Mark Levin, nails it. He's absolutely right. The president is being tried in the court of public opinion. And when your liberal friends talk about how nasty he is, just shake your head and understand they are completely ignorant of what's going on. But it doesn't matter to them. Hatred rises from the left. Remember that. We'll be back with more here on The Daily Perspective.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
You are listening to The Daily Perspective. Wow, what a day we've had today. I hope you get the show notes today because there's a lot of important stuff there. The things that we talked about. Really important stuff. So grab those show notes today. I'll put them online as soon as I can. I have a kind of a pressing appointment right after I get through here. So it'll delay the posting of the podcast and show notes and such. But that'll happen before midday today. So just, you know, grab them as soon as they're available because the show notes today, including the stuff that we're not getting to, especially if you're a newsletter subscriber, you're going to like the stuff that comes as the bonus material today as well, because there's some important stuff there as well about things happening in China, what's happening with Judge Arpaio. Gretchen Carlson, remember her from Fox and Friends? She's back in the news, and there's more stuff. There's just more stuff that's important that you need to see, and it's all in the show notes, especially the stuff, additionally, the stuff that you get if you subscribe. But if you don't subscribe, you just don't get that stuff. Sorry. You know, one of the things that our lying politicians talk about on a regular basis when they are campaigning, they speak in public somewhere and they talk about the gender pay gap, that women making much less than men do. It's widely cited as proof that women face systemic workplace discrimination. Just last week, a women's think tank found that women supposedly get paid half as much as men, even worse than widely cited 80%, or the 80 cents to the dollar. I thought it was 77 cents, but whatever. However, the research has never really been supported. It's never really supported the simplistic dogma of gender discrimination. Research has never held it up. It appears that women tend to do less lucrative jobs for personal and social reasons, most notably to birth and raise children. Well, now, there's a new study by Harvard University, researchers at Harvard, that it provides further proof that women are already getting equal pay for equal work. Economists Valentin Bolotny and Natalia Emanuel basically worked backwards from the usual assumptions by analyzing a workplace in which gender discrimination would be nearly impossible, the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority. As they noted, the MBA, which operates most of the public transport in the greater Boston area, is unionized. That means that men and women do pretty much the same jobs for the same hourly wages and conditions, and promotions are determined by seniority, not performance. In other words, there would be almost no wiggle room for a sexist boss to express his bias. Based on their analysis of the data, looking at pay stubs, time cards, and scheduling between 2011 and 2017, and factoring in employees' sex, age, date of hire, tenure, and family situation, Bolotny and Emanuel found that there is still a pay gap between the genders. Women earn 89 cents for every dollar men do. Yeah, you heard me right. Go ahead, gasp. Yeah. However, you knew that was coming. There's a however. The researchers discovered that the disparity completely disappears when it is factored in that men work significantly longer hours than women. Bolotny and Emanuel said the gap of 89 cents in our setting can be explained entirely by the fact that while having the same choice sets in the workplace, women and men make different choices. By their math, male train and bus drivers worked 83% more overtime than their female colleagues. They were twice as likely to take an overtime shift, which pays time and a half. More likely on short notice to take a shift like that, and half as likely to never take overtime. Meanwhile, women were more likely to take less desirable routes in exchange for working fewer nights, weekends, and holidays. Then there were the different ways men and women responded to having children. Fathers proved more likely than childless men to work overtime for extra cash, whereas mothers took more time off than childless women. Compared to men, female workers took off twice as many unpaid hours under the Family Medical Leave Act each year. The study will undoubtedly fail to satisfy many feminists and others who rail against the gender wage gap. The research only focuses on a single industry. And anyway, some activists want to see society radically restructured to address this supposed problem. That, however, is a question of values, not facts. And commentators would do well to differentiate the two. The gender wage gap is as real as unicorns, and it's been killed more times than Michael Myers. Yet politicians feel the need to genuflect before this phantom figure. That's what economist John Phelan of the wrote about the Harvard study. He goes on to say, let us substitute the quest for phantoms with serious research into the causes of relative incomes. So the Harvard study, this Harvard study, basically reinforces what conservative people, honest people, people who are honest with themselves, have said about this, I'm air quoting, wage gap, every time it's been brought up. And that is that the wage gap exists because not of a difference in gender, but a difference in choices. Women make, on average, less than men do because they make different choices. They choose to work fewer hours because they choose, especially women with children, because they choose to nurture children. They see that as more important, and they carve out the time for that extremely important task in their lives. Men, for their part, see it as important to generate more income so that they can afford to support those children. So they're motivated by different things and make different choices. It's been the law since, I think it's 1963. President John Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Act into law. So it's been the law. Is the law ignored? Is it transgressed from time to time? I'm sure it is. But generally speaking, systemically, no. It's the law. It's the way things work. And politicians step in front of the microphones and the cameras, and they swear, they pledge their lives, their sacred honors, to fix a problem that does not exist. Because there needs to be equality in the workplace. Well, there is equality in the workplace. Ladies, if you work the same job as a man, work the same hours, make the same choices, you'll make the same money. That's how it works. Now, if you think if it's not fair that you have to make the same choices and work the same hours, doing the same jobs as men to get the same amount of money, then we have other issues. Because now we're dealing with a denial of reality. It's the law. Politicians are lying to you. Shocker. Yep. Politicians are lying to you when they tell you that they're fighting for women's rights and equal pay for equal work. Because it's been federal law since the 1960s. The difference is that women make different decisions. They're motivated differently. Men are motivated differently. Why is that? Well, the experts won't like this, but the truth is, that's the way we're wired. We're made that way. Deep down inside, men want to fix things and build things and provide for their families. And deep down inside, women want to nurture and grow those families and provide a great place for them to live and grow. It's just how we're wired. And politicians ignore that because it gets them more votes. Shocker. Well, that'll do it for today. Remember what I said. I've got an appointment I've got to get to right after this. In fact, as soon as we say goodbye, I'm heading out the door. But I'll be back to process everything, and everything will be online for you a little bit later in the morning. God bless you. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.